What's good, Desi Hip Hop fam? You are tuned in to the Unfiltered Podcast live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. And it also streams on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you get podcasts on. I am your host, DJ Raf, live and direct from the US. And this episode, like the rest of the episodes, are brought to you by Sunomi.io. Sunomi is a brand, a company, a service that helps, that's focused on global South Asian artists, global South Asian independent artists. So Sunomi helps artists distribute their music to all the stores around the world. If you don't know about that, go check out Sunomi.io on Instagram and also online on the website, www.sunomi.io. Today, we have a dope plan for this episode. We're hanging out with three artists from different parts of the world. And, you know, it's a pleasure to join them today and talk to them about their music, their careers, and we'll get to know them quite a bit today. Our first guest is a singer, rapper of Bangladeshi heritage, hailing from the UK. His songs like Mango, Tumi Amar, and Where You Been has been on repeat on my playlist, certainly, for the past number of weeks. And more recently, Mariana, which was released just last month. So please join me in welcoming Bilal Shahid to the Unfiltered Podcast. What's good, bro? Happy to
see you, man. Thanks for having me on, bro.
How have you been, bro?
I've been good, man.
Hell yeah, man. I'm glad to have you here on the show. Next up, we're going to have the next artist who hails from Sydney. This is a guy who's been consistently dropping music since 2009. And in the past decade, he's dropped three albums, three EPs, and multiple singles. He's toured the world multiple times. And just last year, he was featured on MTV Hustle in India. So please join me in welcoming El Fresh the Lion.
What's good, bro? Chilling, bro. Chilling.
I'm glad you're still awake, man. I know it's 1 a.m. for you.
Hey, we do it for Desi Hip Hop, man.
Oh, man. Hell yeah. I love it. All right. So our final guest in the show is one of the most iconic DJs, radio personalities, and artists from the UK, originally of Pakistani heritage. Candyman and his partner, DJ Limelight, has interviewed some of the biggest global artists of our time. So please join me in welcoming Candyman.
What's good, bro?
How are you guys doing, man?
Blessed, bro. Blessed.
Awesome, man. I'm so happy to see you guys here, man. We have artists from three different... Okay, well, I'm from the US, but Candyman and Bilal Shahid from the UK, El Fresh the Lion from Australia. This is really cool, man. This is three different parts of the world in one call.
It's a big link up, man.
Hell yeah. I love it. So Candyman, let's start with you, man. How has quarantine been for you these past few months?
It's been a tricky one, to be honest with you, bro. It's been a bit tricky, obviously, with being a DJ, being part of the music industry. One of the best elements of making music, playing music, is the live element. Mm-hmm. And with that just completely gone, I think that's been one of the most challenging parts for not just myself, you know, fellow DJs, DJs around the world, and musicians as well. So It's been challenging in that sense, but at the same time, it's been, you know, it's kind of been a moment like where you can, you know, really dig deep into yourself and ask yourself what other skills do you have, you know what I mean? So
right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, we're all on the same boat, all having the same experiences right now. It's quite crazy. But in a way, this will be the moment in time that we'll forever remember, you know.
Yeah, for real.
People thinking about this.
for real, bro.
Yeah, it's crazy. How about you, Bilal Shahid? How has the past few months been for you,
bro? It's been a mixed one, I'll be honest. On one side, similar to DJs like yourself, Candyman, even for the artist, man, I've had so many cancelled bookings. So obviously all the Bengali society bookings that I usually do, all the universities, all the pressure stuff that would have been happening, all of those cancelled, Mendes, Mellors, all of those little bits and functions all of them cancelled for like over the last 6 months. So it's been sort of a big hit in terms of paycheck and even funding sort of projects as well. So on that side. But then on the other hand, it's given me a chance to link up with a couple producers, songwriters as well. So I think I've probably recorded between sort of 30 to 40 tracks in the last few months. And that's crazy because that's usually what I'll do in like a couple of years really. And because I've just been at home, got my home studio set up, my boys have got all their home studio set up. I've just been going back and forth, just similar to this really, using like apps like this, just recording, writing, exchanging ideas. So that's been good. But otherwise, we're all here. Alhamdulillah, God is great, bro.
Right. Yeah, that's right. You gotta focus on the positives and whatever we can control during these uncertain times. It's crazy. How about yourself, El Fresh?
Not too dissimilar from what the guys were saying here. I mean, Australia, is kind of in a similar boat. We've been in lockdown for a minute now, and Sydney, is a bit fortunate in that we had a second, somewhat of a second wave, but not so much. There's another city in Australia called Melbourne, which has really been hit. So, with a second wave, so it's really rocked the music industry hard. Candyman was saying, even out here, live music is just ground to a halt, man. And that's the biggest challenge, for myself. I was planning to put out an album this year, did end up putting out an album this year, but we had to kind of push it back a little bit to what we originally planned. And, we had a whole bunch of, we had a tour planned for that. We had, a whole bunch of different activations planned because the record is centered around where I'm from, which is Southwest Sydney. And we were going to do a whole bunch of pop-up gigs and rocking up to different areas in the region and just really engaging with people and invested in setups to be able to do that. And then, COVID hit, we was like, man, we can't do any of that now. So, I just changed the plan. First month or two were, really rocked us, but after that, you kind of have to adapt, right? So just been adapting, focusing on the music, focusing on what we can, taking the blessings as they come, and it's thankfully it's been going well for the past couple months.
Right. Yeah, that's that makes a lot of sense, man. During these times, I've realized that one of the strongest, one of the most important things for humanity is like each other. We just gotta be there for each other and our families and the love for each other. And that's literally why, this show came up, is just get artists together. Let's talk. Let's have some fun. Let's get to know each other better, and just progress from there. So I'm really happy you guys are here today. I've explained, the viewers know this and, so many guests know this, but the way this show is, organized is that it's kind of like a game show. We play games together and get to know each other through these games. So that brings me to the first game, the first segment of the show called Scavenger Hunt. So Scavenger Hunt, this is a segment of the show where I ask each of the guests to share something with the audience, something in your room. It can be anything, as long as you tell us a story about it so we can get to know you better. So let's see who we can start with. Bilal Shahid, do you have something to share?
Yeah, man, I did some digging in the old drawers earlier on. And I've basically, it's my first ever mic that I bought when I was around, 15, 16. It's a Samsung, can't remember what it's called, CO1U mic, and it was about £80 from, is a shop called CEX, and it's like a secondhand technology store. And at the time, I don't come from a family with like a lot of money, a lot of, riches like that, so definitely it was something where I was looking in the store, I'm like, man, like all my friends have got their studio setups, all the DJs and stuff, and I was just fed up going to other people's bedrooms and houses to record. I just wanted to sort of, be in my own zone and record my own music and write, because I've loved doing that since I was 12, 13 years old, really. I used to get about £20 a week from my mum to go to school, and that also included my bus fare to the school, Monday to Friday. Oh, snap. And now this mic, So and so it's about, it worked out to about like £3. So my mum knew I weren't getting up to no good, spending my money hanging around after school, getting up to no good. So it was literally budgeted money. But I remember for about 3 weeks, I didn't have any lunch. One of my boys, I shared his lunch for about a couple of weeks, and walked to school, man. It was only half an hour, so it wasn't even like a big trek or anything like that. But I copped this mic, and it was a quick plug and play Bluetooth mic, and literally from this mic, I recorded about 3 or 4 singles, and I was about 16. I don't know if Kans remembers this. I released a song called "Can't Live Alone" back then, and it hit like, this was when YouTube was just starting off really, and you didn't have like, you literally, like, everyone's got a YouTube account, just if you've got a Google account basically. Back then you had to register to have a YouTube account, so not everyone like was on YouTube and was blogging and how it's like now basically. So I uploaded a song that I'd literally written, recorded on this Bluetooth mic. I had no idea about like vocal stacking or you know, processors, and it was literally on GarageBand. I literally done the whole thing on GarageBand. It was like my training wheels, and obviously I use Logic. But that song, I sent it off to get mixed and mastered by a friend. But pretty much the whole song was done on a GarageBand and a £60, £80 mic. And that was literally the start of my whole like musical journey from then up until now. It literally propelled me. I'd literally done a whole video to it. It just blew up in the like UK. It wasn't even a South Asian scene that it blew up in. It just blew up like just to normal people. Like I wouldn't say mainstream, but like that sort of barrier between just before mainstream and like underground sort of things. It got like 2-3 million hits. I was 16 at the time, man. And literally just from that, and now I'm here today, obviously. So much has happened in between. Obviously, Kans had probably followed my journey since then. That's pretty much my story. I could go on, like, literally so much has happened between this. When I was, like, I'm 28 now, man. It's like 12 years. I could probably take up the whole hour, but I thought I'd share that because, you know, it's still got dust on it, man. I need to like give it a little wipe and just, you know, put it up somewhere just so I can see it every day and then keep inspiring me to continue.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, thank you for sharing. That's a very valuable story. You know, it's always good to remember these moments in time. You know, that's amazing. Love it. Excuse me. So El Fresh, what do you want to share with us, bro?
Yeah, man. I got these right here, which was a gift from my DJ, actually. And I don't think they're worth anything, but, you know, I'm not like big on being able to hook these up and find out what they were, but they're valuable to me for a number of reasons. I mean, my DJ MK1, who's you know, been in the scene in Sydney and Australia for 2 decades, just in the hip hop scene out here, you know, always has a way of being able to get his hands on things that, you know, you can't find, you know. And for my birthday, he hooked me up with these two, knowing that I'm a big sports fan, you know, and sports is a big inspiration for me. Actually, before I got into music, my dream was to be an athlete, was to be like a pro athlete. And I remember as a kid, like, this was, you know, like primary school, so, you know, grade 6, you know, and I was like, man, I want to be a pro athlete. I was like, I want to be a runner, right? I want to be a runner. I want to be inspired by all these athletes I see on TV. I want to be a runner. And I told my dad, yeah. I was like, Dad, I want to be a runner. And what he does is he's like, okay, cool. You know, you're going to have to train, right? I was like, yeah, I'm going to have to train. He was like, okay, well, let's go train. He puts me in the car. We go to the local park. And we get there and he's like, okay, now I want you to just run like 5 laps of this big oval. that's your, you know, we're getting started on your training. I was like, I don't know if I really want to do that, you know? you know, maybe realize, okay, well, maybe that's not my passion. You know, that's not my thing. Then it became cricket. So like I played that competitively for quite a while. Until I picked up an injury. And in that period was when I found music. Mm-hmm. And once I found music, once I started learning how to make music, that was it. That was game over. Like, there was just nothing else that I just didn't have the passion for sport anymore. It was all in music. And I became a fan of sports and more drew more inspiration from sport than music. You know,
nice.
Fast forward to like last year, one goal that I'd always had in my mind was like being someone who's massively inspired by sport was like, I want to write a song for like a sports, like a sports thing, like a sports team or something. And if it's basketball, that would be the best thing in the world. I get hit up by the Sydney Kings basketball team, which is, you know, we have the National Basketball League here, which is our version of the NBA, the NBL. The Sydney Kings basketball team reaches out and is like, hey, we want you to write our team song. We never had a song before. We want you to write a team song. And that's the song that all the players are going to come out to every game. I was like, fuck, man, that's crazy. Like, of course I'm going to do that. I was like, the song is already written. It's done. We had, you know, like, I know this. And we smashed it out, pumped it out, and then got to play it in front of a record-breaking crowd of like 17,000 people. We had LaMelo play for Wollongong. So I got to play, perform the song at the game that LaMelo came to Sydney to play against the Kings. And it was a sellout. It was crazy, man. It was a massive, massive dream come true to see just the two inspirations of music and sport line up like that. It's a blessing.
Wow, that's crazy. It's like you imagined it and it like manifested. Like you literally attracted that situation into your life. It's crazy.
Most definitely.
That's amazing. That's cool, man. Thank you for sharing, bro. I love that. Candyman, bro. What do you?
Yes, bro. My one's quite big, man. You're gonna have to give me a second, bro.
For sure.
So I've got one of my DJ controllers, one of my favorite DJ controllers.
Wow.
Can I see it?
Yeah.
Basically, why I wanted to use this, because obviously, you know, I wanted to have a bit of story behind it. I was never a DJ. I've always been more on the rapping side of things. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I got into music in the first place, man. Like in school,
yeah,
there was a group of us, you know, and they obviously bought us turntables. At that point, we were still running on the vinyls. And I always kind of like, I was always just fascinated, even though I'd always want to be on the mic, I was always just fascinated with wanting to jump on the decks. And, you know, I was fascinated by the whole scratching thing and I'd always snap the needle off or something. but yeah, years later, obviously when everything went digital, you guys obviously know my right-hand man is DJ Limelight.
Yeah.
This guy is just one of the sickest DJs in the world, bro. You know what I mean? And just being around him, I just picked up so much that it kind of just led me to it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't looked back, bro. I haven't looked back ever since. I absolutely love DJing. Still nice. Love making music at the same time. But I think DJing it's just opened up a whole new part of my brain, man. I listen to music so differently now.
Right.
It's crazy,
right.
Man.
Absolutely yeah, crazy. That's right. So how many years would you say you've been a DJ?
I'd say about 5 years now. 5 years I've been messing around with the DJing thing. Always been involved in music. As Bilal would tell you, you know, some of my earlier tunes and stuff.
Right.
But yeah, 5 years, I would say, man.
Nice. That's sick. That's awesome. That's really cool, man. And when would you say you became a radio personality? Was that before you were a DJ?
No, basically. So what happened was, you know, like I said, we had a group of us and we were going around at this point. Yeah. The whole UK hip hop thing, forget the Desi thing, the whole UK hip hop thing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even bubbling yet. The only UK rapper you guys probably heard of back then was Dizzy Rascal. You know what I mean? This is early days. Yeah. Few years later, you know, I met DJ Limelight in college. You know, we've just left high school. We've linked up and it's crazy how we met as well, because back then we didn't have Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all of that. It was MSN Messenger. You guys remember yeah. MSN Messenger, right?
MSN.
yeah. Bro. And a friend of mine that I went to school with, he was like, yo, bro, like, I know this dude, like this guy, this Asian guy, he's mad into hip hop. I think you guys should connect, man. I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, cool. His name's Limelight. So we got talking. And it turned out that we both go to the same college. And I said to him, you know what, bro, let's meet up. You know what I mean? Let's link up. Let's talk and that. And then I just, it was like a blind date, man. I was just walking around looking for who's this limelight guy, because I didn't know what he looks like, bro. We didn't have Instagram back then. And then yeah, man, we hooked up from there. We formed a group called Chronicle Entertainment, and we just went up and down the country, just shutting down shows, making music, pressing CDs. Yeah,
I remember that, man.
Yeah. Like, you would catch us outside your, if you went to university back in the day, you would catch us or one of us outside your university with a backpack on with 200 CDs in there trying to sell you a CD. Like, that's the history, man. Nice. You know what I mean?
I love that hustle, man. That's beautiful. Yeah. So many artists and rappers around the world like made it that way, you know, like yeah. that hustle, like selling out of their trunks, selling out of their backpacks. So that's Definitely. Amazing. Love it. And you know, that's inspiring for the new generation of artists too. They don't know about that hustle.
I mean, now, the internet's all good. You know, this new age that we live in, it's all good. But yeah. I think the element of people going out, actually talking to each other and networking, right. that whole thing's missing. You know what I mean? Like with us, we'd go to Central London, we'd go to Oxford Street with CDs, and then there'll be a record shop, and you know, someone like Kanye West might be in the UK, and they might be at that record shop, and just seeing someone like him is just mad inspirational. You're like, wow, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that element there is missing. I believe so, anyway.
That makes sense. That makes sense, man. Thank you for sharing, bro. Yeah, I got to know something about you that I didn't, so that's amazing. shout out to all the viewers and the audience, man, on YouTube. Shout out to all the 300 or more people watching us. Nabiha Amin, I shout out to you. I see you. Atman, Unisouls, all of you guys, thank you for watching. We're here today live with El Fresh, Candyman, and Bilal Shahid. We're going to move on to the next segment of the show, and it's called Feedback. So Feedback, this is a segment of the show where we go way back into your feeds, social media feeds, and then ask you to tell us what's going on and tell us a story. So I'm going to kick this off.
Man, this could either be dope or mad embarrassing.
No, it's good. All right, here's the first one. Bilal Shahid, man, it's hard to find pictures of you, bro, because your Instagram is like very updated, mad. Regular. You know what I mean? So I had to dig into Facebook for this one.
My days, that was a long time, man. This was actually the first like big show. Like it was this one's the Manchester Mega Miller, which is like, I mean, I haven't been to it like for a few years, but the year I went, that's when everyone, like music, like South Asian music at the time, it was at a really good place. So people like Rackstar, he had just like released like his single, like Journeyman, and there's another few people, but me personally, I was with him in the back of his car going to a lot of gigs, a lot of Mellors, and this particular gig, like I remember, it was the first Mellor that I'd gone to where we had actually got prime slot. So Candle know there's like different slots, like you could be booked to come to a Mellor and you might come like early in the day and there's actually like two people in the crowd, but you just got to do your thing and go, but you still feel buzzed. But at this point, it was literally prime slot, like what, 5 o'clock, 5, 6, 5 and 7, everyone was there. It was literally like so many, I've never seen so many brown faces in one place before that. And I can't remember how long ago it is, but what I did at the time, I think that song Gangnam Style had just come out. I got my dancers and I got my DJ at the time, who was a guy called Taz. He does a lot of like family stuff, like he's like blown up with like his family, like and his social media stuff, but he was doing a lot of DJing at the time, and he was behind the decks that day. He was like, bro, you should remix this into your song. People will love it. And yeah, I remixed the Gangnam Style literally in the middle of the set, and like they loved it, man. I busted two little cowboy fingers, you can see me doing there. And yeah, man, rest is history. It was a good show. Went off stage afterwards, I was buzzing. And yeah, man, like shows like this is a reason why it keeps me wanting to do live events and, you know, see the fans and the supporters, because like you guys were saying earlier, with the whole digital era, it's all well and good, you know, communicating with your supporters and the people that, that like to listen to your music or whatever art you're doing through like lives and whatever. But it's just, it's the feeling is different, man. When you're on stage and you know there's people there that you've never seen before and they're singing along, vibing to something you've literally made up in your head in your bedroom. It's a really good feeling, and the adrenaline afterwards, it's like a drug, man. You get off and you, you feel like you're on top of the world and you just want to get back up. Then you feel like you're invincible. You feel like you can do anything. And I mean, it slowly wears off, but during that sort of 1-2 hours after you come off stage, you feel like you're the guy, man. And yeah, man, that's the reason why I love music. And I'll never quit, man. Never.
That's sick, man. I love that. That's an awesome story, bro. I love it. I knew there was going to be a story with this. All right, here's the next one.
Oh, there's another one. Oh, man. So this is my twin brother.
Yeah, you both look like twins, man.
Oh, man, like, I look so young there, man. So, yeah, so I pretty much, like, came onto the South Asian music scene, as you might like, very young. So you can see me there. I mean, I haven't grown many facial hairs since that picture was taken, but I've got a little something. But Nihao was one of the guys at that period a few years ago where he was really pushing sort of a lot of the brown music, and he had I mean, I don't know the whole background around it, but he had secured his slot at Radio One, which was amazing. Obviously you got Cans and Limelight now, One Extra, which is amazing, because I personally feel like South Asian music, you know, we've got such talent and such a pool of, right, like just different genres and like just different sounds. I really feel like our music, like the fusion of music that we do, really deserves a spot on more on sort of mainstream radio, like Radio One, One Extra, Capital, mm-hmm, Kiss FM. I do think that there is a space for us. It just needs to be carved out, and I feel like slowly it will happen at some point. I'm sure it will. 100%. And yeah, man, this picture, I went down. It was my first interview on Radio One. Yeah, man, I remember I was just really nervous this day on that day. The interview, I can't even remember the interview. Like, it went by so quick. But it was a lovely guy. He's always supported, and I think he's doing really well for himself in terms of like the journalism and everything that he does. I think he does a lot more sort of news, political stuff now. From what I've heard, anyway. But I haven't caught up with him in a while. But yeah, man, big up Nihao, man. It was a really big support and really like instilled me with a lot of confidence that actually I'm good enough to be played on like Radio One, especially like making music and mixing and mastering that stuff from my bedroom. For it to be played out on radio, it really gave me confidence. Like, yeah, that's, man, right, I must be doing something right for them to play it out on national radio. Like, it must be sounding all right, because otherwise, really, I didn't have I didn't really have anyone professional telling me, giving me any feedback. It was literally from my ears, and I didn't have any professional headphones and nothing. It was literally just like, you know, wired, like normal headphones. I was mixing the stuff off. So yeah, man. You know, awesome. It's quite nice seeing that picture, actually, man.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. Yeah, shout out to all the, you know, DJs around the world and radio, you know, radio heads around the world who like put on artists, you know, and like really give them that confidence and, you know, help people go to the next level, you know. Candyman too, you know, shout out to you, bro. The next one is for you. Tory Lanez, tell me this story. I'm curious.
It's an interesting one, actually. He's in the UK, you know. When you're in the UK, you land at Heathrow, you have to come and check for your boys Candyman and DJ Limelight, you know what I mean? So yeah, man, it's funny because this happened around the whole you know, when Tory and Drake squashed their beef, or you know, what we thought was beef. So it was an interesting interview. We got to speak about, you know, his link ups with the UK, and you know, back in the day, what used to happen as radio presenters, we always used to find that when Americans get here, their record labels tell them, "Oh, yo, this artist is popping." So when you get interviewed and they ask you, "Do you know anything about UK music?" Just say, "Yeah, man, like, you know, shout out to Tiny Temper and shout out to Dizzy Rascal," you know what I mean? But like, this guy, he's certified, man, you know what I mean? He's certy, like, he knew, said, "Yeah, man, like, I linked up with Giggs, that's my dog. Shout out to Western. Western is a group from West London here, popping. They make bangers. Shout out to them lot. I just shot a music video with Stefflon Don last night. Nice. And yeah, it was just crazy, bro. He was just so like in tune with what's going on over here, because there's loads going on over here right now. And you know, there was a point when collaborations, UK to US collaborations, were forced. You know what I mean? Like you would you could hear a track and you just know it was a payment situation, because Jadakiss or someone would come on a tune and say, yeah man, you know, from NY to Brixton, and then do a quick 16 and bounce, you know what I mean? But now it's like it's authentic, man, it's organic, and he's one of those guys that's in tune with it. We got to speak about the whole Drake situation as well. You know, even got a little exclusive out of him. There might be a collaboration project soon. You just never know, man. And yeah, bro, the jewels on his neck, the jewels on his wrist, they were just blinding me, bro. Just straight diamonds, bro, shining, man. The boy comes shining, bro. The grill, you can see the grill as well, bro. And yeah, bro, just all around mad, humble dude, bro. And absolutely loved interviewing him, man.
Nice, man. Yeah, you know, talking about artists who really know UK artists, this guy, I got the last interview with him before he unfortunately passed. Tell me about Pop Smoke.
That's actually, bro, this one makes me emotional, man. Right. Like, the guy was just mad cool, bro. As you can even see, he would have been 21 that day, the day I posted his picture. You know, he's a baby, man, 20 years old. Right. You know, when I first heard Welcome to the Party, you know, we didn't know how much he was in tune with the UK drill sound. I thought maybe someone's just got lucky. And then a few months later, Skepta's jumped on the remix. And then I'm hearing he's working with 808 Mello, and he's working with this producer and that producer who's popping from the UK. Like, he was just in tune with it, bro. And like you said, last interview. And you know, like usually when you interview like American artists, they're over here and they have 100 interviews to do. And he said he's done about 100 interviews, but we just connected, man. Like, we just connected. I think there's even a video of him saying like, where are you guys from? And yeah. I'm like, yeah, my family's from Pakistan and Lam's from India. He's like, yeah, man. Like, you know, our F's with y'all, man. Like the Pakistanis and all that. And then we came off it and like, you know, I'm getting ready to go to my car because I'm thinking I don't want a ticket. I got to leave. Lime's just ready to leave. And he was just so, like, intrigued and, like, just he was just, I don't know, man. There was, the energy was just mad, bruv. We just stood there for, like, an hour and a half after the interview just talking. And he was like, yeah, like, anytime you're in the States, shout me. When I come back, I gotta come to one of the hooker lounges. You gotta hook me up with some dissy girls. Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, his energy is just, his whole energy, that aura was just, there was something just that made me warm towards him. And you know, like, I'm spiritual, I'm quite religious as well. And I feel like when you're gonna go, you kind of know you're gonna go.
Right.
And you kind of leave an impression on people, man. And I think he definitely left an impression on people. Not just us, man. The world, bro.
That's right. That's true. That's true. I remember you guys posting that. And then on Desi Hip Hop, we also posted that little clip of him shouting out to all the Desis and stuff. And that's very powerful, bro. Like, no matter what, like, it's extremely powerful. And I appreciate you guys for, you know, making that happen. It's really amazing.
For real.
So thank you for sharing the story, bro. We'll move on to El Fresh, bro. Like, this looks like an extremely old picture.
Yeah, what is that? Oh, snap. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was crazy, man. That was a cool opportunity of performing live on radio. We had one of the radio stations. So our version of the BBC in Australia is the ABC. Uh-huh. And so we have, just like, you know, BBC, you got One Extra, BBC One, like all the different, you know, BBC stations. ABC has a whole range of them. And so one of them is Radio National, which is where this, or what this segment was for. And, you know, we had put together, or they invited us to come on to perform a song off or to perform tracks of what was my second album at the time, Become. And that album, I can't remember if that was before or after it got nominated for an ARIA Award, which is, I suppose, our version of like the Grammys or the Brit Awards and stuff. And that was a vibe, because there were songs that we performed there. Like there's one song on the album called Be Cool. And that whole song is like just it's a real intimate storytelling song about kind of like my experiences as an artist, having to deal with, you know, early on in my career, having to deal with racism from people in the audience, and then leaving the venue and having to deal with it from, you know, people hanging out outside the venue and or whatever. And so we never performed it live because it never worked in a live set. It's too full on to work in a live setting. But this was like the perfect opportunity for it, because the people in this photo were like people who you had to apply to be able to attend and be in the audience. So like the majority of people in that photo are people in the audience. And so to be able to perform it in that setting, I remember performing that song and people were just like, were clapping after every song. But after that song, no one clapped, because it was like, I don't know if I'm supposed to clap after hearing that song because of just how like full on the content of that song is. It was a powerful moment, man. It was a really powerful performance moment, and yeah, I'll remember that. That was dope.
That's interesting. I bet those the subject matter of that song is still relevant today, unfortunately, man, especially where I'm at. Jeez. All right. So this is your next.
Man, that's what I'm saying. It's either gonna be real dope or mad embarrassing, bro. You picked the mad.
It's not embarrassing.
Yo, that's my little brother, man. That's me and my little brother. You know, I got way too much love for my little brother, man. And we're like polar opposites when it comes to personality. You know, I'm the guy who chose to, you know, live a public life and be on stage for a living, and he chose to be a high school teacher. But, you know, in terms of personality, he's just like is a soft spoken guy. Like he's not the guy to have a huge conversation with, but he'll tell you what you need to know in this, you know, using the fewest amount of words, you know. And yeah, he's paying out to be end up being a high school teacher, which was super interesting because of how quiet he was. I started to freak out a little bit when he went to uni to become a teacher. I was like, bro, you know, you got to like stand up in front of a room full of people and talk, right? He was like, yeah. No. I was like, all right, sweet. And, you know, seeing him teach and seeing him be like a role model for some of these kids, man, like it's just been a great kind of journey to see his growth and his development. And yeah, man, super proud of him, like of all the people in the world. Like, you know, you always want, and I remember telling him while we were younger, like whenever it came to like stuff people would ordinarily, you know, kind of have you in roles where you're competing against each other, whether it was sport, whether it was school, whether it was whatever it might be, you know, you had like your cousins or you had like, you know, family members or whatever, be like, hey, you need to do, you know, you're competing up against, you know, your older brother, you know, he set the bar for you. My whole thing was like to my younger brother, and I kept saying it to him and still do, is like, I want you to be better than me. Like, you know, I encourage him to surpass me. And then when he did, like, for example, in school or in sport, you know, some of his achievements and stuff like that, it was never a moment of like, oh man, my little brother did better than me. It was always a thing of like, hell yeah, that's what it's right. about, you know, and that's a beautiful thing. So, right. Yeah, man, there's nothing but love in that picture there.
That's awesome, man. You know, that type of support is so important, right? Like for all of us, you know, for artists, entrepreneurs, DJs, whatever we're doing in life that is, you know, going to challenge us, the support, the family, the friends, the love is what will get us through it. It's amazing. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing, bro. I love it. I knew we would get some insight into you guys' lives through that segment, and we did. So I'm happy about that. All right, guys. So we're going to move on to the next segment, and it's called Social Undistancing. So So social undistancing, this is a segment, you know, where we get closer with each other and get to know each other a little better. You know, in this world, we're distancing ourselves so much. But in this segment, we'll try to get to know each other just a little better. So in this segment, we're all going to ask each of the guests one or two questions. And the guest, you can decide to answer it or not. You can answer whatever you like. You can answer all of it. It's up to you. So I will get started. So we'll all ask Candyman the first set of questions, you know. So I will get started with this one. Candyman, tell me, you know, you've been on the radio for so long. You know, you've done Asian Beats on BBC Radio 1. And then now on Asian Network, you've got a new show with DJ Limelight. And, you know, over these years, you've... you've really showcased all of hip hop, all of music, but also a lot of Desi, you know, South Asian artists over the past few years. And what do you see as the main difference now? Like, you know, what do you see in the scene? Like, what's happening that's new? You know, what's interesting to you today, you know, about that? That's my question to you, but we'll all ask you questions and you can choose which ones to answer, you know? Sure. Bilal, what's your question for Candyman?
To be fair, this ain't even a cop-out. I probably would have asked a similar question to you, man. I'll be honest with you. Literally, just what do you think's next for us in terms of, you know, South Asian whole, in terms of, obviously, I don't want us to pigeonhole ourselves into something. And that's been a major issue in the past, which is why I feel like we haven't done as well as we could. But in terms of just us as a whole, what's next, where can we go from here, and that's pretty much it, really.
Nice. Yeah, great question. I love it. El Fresh, bro, what's the question for Candyman?
Yeah, I mean, I got a completely coming in a completely different angle question for Candyman. Like, in Australia right now, right, the influence of drill is huge, man. Like, there's groups out here who have gone not just viral, but who have gone, you know, international through making their interpretation of drill music. I'm not too sure if you've heard of, like, a group, the most well-known group out of here is called 1-4, and they're from Western Sydney. They did a collab with ASAP Ferg a couple months ago. But I'm curious to know, like, UK's perspective and your perspective on, like, you know, the movements of drill and just kind of how you've seen it grow and develop to see it now influence, you know, young kids out here to the point where they're adapting it, making their own style, their own sound, and you know, putting it out there into the world. But yeah, I just love to hear your perspective on the evolve or the movement of drill and where it's at.
Nice.
Great questions. Very good questions, man. Very good. Very great. Very good. So what? I only get to answer one, yeah?
Sure, you can answer whatever you like. You can answer all of them.
I'll start with El Fresh's question, because it's the freshest in my head. No pun intended. But yeah, I love it, bro. Absolutely love it, man. Like, what's happening with drill is kind of what we wanted to see happen with grime music back in the day. Mm. And I think... the world just wasn't ready for it. I think a lot of it was to do with the lingo, the accent, the slang that was being used, and, you know, being on the 140 BPM, that whole double time thing. I don't think the Americans got it as much at that point. Australians, I mean, you know, I remember hearing some Australian grime back in the day, but with drill, it's absolutely sick, bro. If you're asking me what I think about Australian drill, absolutely love it, man. I love it. Like, wow. It's sick. Like, wow. We feel closer to the Australians than we do to even the Americans. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit in culturally,
right? Yeah.
In that sense. So, absolutely love it, man. And in regards to what Bilal's asked and you've asked, Raf, what's next? I think you guys asked, and what do I think the difference is now? I think the major difference now is, like, I remember growing up in an era when, you know, I can speak from my experiences growing up in UK. There was a lot of this, I'm an Asian rapper or I'm a Desi rapper. Whereas now I think this new generation, I'm a rapper who just happens to be Desi or who happens to be Asian. And I absolutely love that, bro. Like, there's just as many non-Asian kids that are listening to Asian rappers just rapping as much as they are with the Asian kids. And that's a huge difference, man. I think that's like kind of what we've always wanted, you know, similar to what Bilal said. You said, you know, always putting ourselves in a box. And yeah, man, I think we're breaking out of that box, bro. And I think we're starting to break doors down. And I think like it actually gasses me up to see different movements around the world as well. We've obviously always had the UK thing going. We've got the Australia thing going. And then to see like what even brothers are doing in the States, whether it be with the rapping side of things or whether it's more to do with like the singing side of things. It's crazy, man. And then you've got this whole scene bubbling up in Holland, in the Netherlands, and obviously we can't leave India out. What's going on out there? You know what I mean? It's sick, man. It's absolutely sick, bro. And that's the major difference, bro. I think, like, and everyone linking up. And even yourself, Raf, man, I have to salute you, bro. Like, the work you put in and DC Hip Hop put in, bro, it's crazy, man. Like, things like this, like, it's mad. We never had this, you know what I mean? Like, it's absolutely sick, bro.
I appreciate you, man. That's amazing. That means a lot to me, you know? I'm one of those type of guys who, like, I'm a workhorse, you know, like, I'd be working every fucking day on this shit, you know, and I don't really stop to think, you know, like, so I really appreciate that, man.
Now you're on your grind, bro. We love it. We love it.
Yeah. And the best part is we all are, you know, and that's inspiring, you know. I'm happy that the next generation of kids or the current generation of kids are going to grow up looking at us and work we do. They're going to know that they can work hard and get there themselves. And that's awesome. Thank you, bro. I really appreciate it. All right. So let's move on to El Fresh, bro. my question to you is, I actually have two questions. So mine is, you know, I read online that El Fresh is an acronym. And it's a long acronym. I read it and I forgot it. I want you to tell me what that means and, you know, what it means to you as well. And also, you know, and my next question is, over the past decade, you've been doing this grind for a while. What is one thing you learned, you know, from this whole thing? That's my thing. And Bilal, what's your question for El Fresh, bro?
I think my question would be, obviously, I mean, I'd still consider myself as relatively new to the music game, man. I know there are veterans like yourself out there. I think it'd be good to get some, I'm always looking to learn, man, and I think it'd be nice to get some advice just of the longevity of music and sort of what you would say to younger artists coming up in the game today.
Sick. That's perfect. Candyman, what's the question for El Fresh?
My question to El Fresh, bit personal, bro, but, you know, kind of coming into the whole the rap game, the hip-hop game, the grime scene here in the UK. In the earlier days, we kind of felt a lot of, you know, stereotypes towards us, and we felt a lot of things like that. For you, being in Australia, being a Desi man, being a Sikh man with a turban and a beard coming into the game, did you feel any kind of bias towards you, you know, like any kind of negative vibes towards you, bro, and how did you deal with that?
How long you got, bro? for real. I mean, I can touch all of them, and Raf, just starting with yours, because it kind of works. The questions are dope because they kind of work chronologically. I mean, fresh is an acronym, so fresh is forever rising, exceeding sudden hardships. And that came from, you know, when I started making music in school, in high school, I had a close mate of mine who I was sharing my tracks with, and his compliment for me was just like, it's fresh, it's cool, it's fresh. And so when I got to a point where I felt confident enough to share it online, the platform I was sharing music on was a platform called SoundClick. So, you know, before SoundCloud, before all that jazz, it was SoundClick. It was like this charts kind of website, and I needed a name, so I went with Fresh MC. And fresh, you know, I wanted to give it my own definition because hip hop has that tradition of taking what's given to you and redefining it, making it your own. So, you know, it became that acronym, Forever Rising, Exceeding Sudden Hardships. And that was my mindset back then. I very much had like this warrior mindset. I'm always going to overcome whatever, you know, and it still kind of applies to now. L is just a, you know, it stands for lion. The name initially was El Fresh, and what I realized at one point, I was on tour. It was my first national tour. And I got to open up for Nas on his first headline tour for his national tour. And what I realized was at that point in my career, I hadn't put out any music commercially. So people were not going to be able to find my music as such, but I wanted to perform and create a moment on stage that people would remember. And so halfway through my set, me and my team, what we would do is my DJ would drop just a loop of like a mixture of all these lion roars, and I would fucking walk in like a figure eight on stage as if I was like a lion prowling on stage for like 30 seconds, bro. Like just cut the music and we would just do that. And the whole idea was that, okay, well, these people are probably not going to, if they remember the music, they're not going to be able to find it anywhere because I'm so new to the game at that point that they're just not going to connect. But if they can remember there was that lion dude, then okay, well, we've created an image, right? And it worked. Like I had, you know, I went into the same venues later, you know, a couple of years later, and they're like, hey, you're that lion dude. I was like, yeah, yeah, or welcome back, lion. And it was like, okay, cool. So at that point I realized that, you know, the L, just being L Fresh, was too subtle, and hip-hop is not subtle, so you know, it became L Fresh the Lion.
Nice.
What was your second question? Your other question was
the same as Shade is like, if you have any like pointers.
Yeah, cool. I might touch Candyman's question first and then get to that one. But you know, coming up here, bro, like the biggest challenge initially was thought I was like this religious rapper. That was the first like challenge, because it was like, okay, well, he must be this spiritual, peaceful kind of dude. So, you know, when it came to music industry, that was the box they put me in. I was kind of viewed in this kind of exotic lens, you know, different to the UK. Like out here in Australia, especially when I was coming up, there's no desi like media, there's no brown media, there's no platforms that we even have that allows us to cultivate audiences within our own community. So the only platforms I could go to was just, you know, the independent scene and that would lead you pathways into the mainstream scene. And so every step of the way it was knocking on doors, breaking down barriers and having to deal with stereotypes. Like my first shows were, you know, people in the crowd before I even opened my mouth saying some racist BS, you know, and I just have to kind of constantly use that to my advantage to flip expectations and stereotypes. I'll give you one like mad real messed up example, just kind of how ingrained and how BS some of this shit is over here. But like, and this is a more recent example too, but there's a festival here in Australia, one of the biggest festivals. They had already messed up and reached out to me like a year before and booked me on some mad, like we were booking Indian acts kind of thing. And then we made like an Indian stage, and it was like this whole stereotypical, like watered down what white people think India is kind of BS. And it turns out, you know, it was like a Kentucky sponsored like stage to promote their new tour to India and shit like that. So it was like this mad BS thing. Anyway, the next year, to make it up to me, they invited me back to come to the festival. And that was the year I got nominated for the ARIE Award. And in their mind, they're thinking they're making it up to me by offering me like a pretty good amount of money to perform. But they offered me to perform on the world stage. And I was like, you know, went back to them like, man, I don't perform world music. I just got nominated for best hip hop work. Like, unless you're inviting the other four artists who got nominated in this category to be performing on the world stage, I don't want to be on the world stage. Like, I just am not that, you know, I make hip hop music, not world music. So the thing in Australia is, you know, constantly having to navigate an industry that, you know, there's very little people of your community or even who are from like desi communities in the mainstream or in the industry, that you just kind of have to negotiate having to educate people at the same time as trying to forge a career. So it's been challenging, but it's been blessings at the same time, because it also means that there's, you know, you have moments where you can create shit and leave your mark, and then, you know, there's many others who are coming up not having to deal with the same BS, you know. So it's a blessing that way. And then just quickly with, you know, Bilal's question, and at Raph's question, man. Like, just one thing I've learned, and as a bit of advice, I think, and is probably the hardest thing to do as an artist, is like finding your voice. And I think your voice is like the biggest key. And I feel like I've only just started to do that now. So I feel like I'm at a point where I feel like I'm brand new, and I'm just learning that. But what I mean by that is, like, we all have our influences, right? Like, we all have listened to our influences, and they inevitably subconsciously influence the type of music that we create. But I think trying to come to a space where you can balance what you've learned from your influences and what you've got, the experiences you have in your life, plus what you bring that makes your sound unique and your style unique, and really embracing that, is so important in the game. It's so important in music, because that's what I think, you know, if, when you're thinking longevity, that's what people remember you for. Like, for me, the goal now, and I think something that I wish I knew when I was younger, is like, okay, when within the first 5 seconds of one of my songs playing, people should know that that's an El Fresh the Lion song, just based on sonics, just based on the vibe, just based on the voice. And, you know, like, I think that's really important. In the same way that when a Timbaland track plays or a Pharrell track plays, you know straight away that it's they've touched it. So, you know, that authentic voice, I think, is really, really important. And I think that's the key to longevity too.
Beautiful. I love that. That's amazing. That's a really good advice, El Fresh. Find your voice, find your brand, find who you are as an artist, and that's helpful for longevity. And that's perfect, because that's the perfect segue to the next segment that we have here today, and it's called Independence is Priceless. Actually, before the next segment, we forgot to ask Bilal Shahid the questions, man.
I was going to say. Yeah. I was going to say, he got away with it too easy, bro.
Bilal Shahid, bro, my question to you is, you know, where do you think Arsenal will end this season?
I was
gonna ask you, bro, like, what's goals for you, man? Like, one of the things that, you know, I think is great to learn about people is like trying to figure out or learn about their vision and where they want to go and what they want to build and what they want to do. And yeah, man, what's goals for you?
Nice, great question, love it. Candyman.
My question to you is, bro, I see you got a mic in front of you. You clearly got a setup in your house. How important do you think it is, 2020, being a singer, to have, you know, a setup at home that you get an idea in your head and you want to lay it down? How important is that to you? And just being like, not having to rely on anyone, rely on a studio engineer to get to studio and just being able to do it yourself. How key has that been in your career?
Love it. Great questions, right, man. Perfect. Thank you, guys.
Well, I'll just start off with Ras' question first, because it's an easy one. I definitely think we're going to be top four, man, this year. Yes. I don't want to be any more optimistic than that, because, right, bro, being an Arsenal supporter, especially recently, that's like, it tugs at your heartstrings, man. And I've been on the verge of, like, literally got veins coming out of my head sometimes. Like, it's just one minute you're elated, and one minute you're just like, man, like, I can't go to the barbershop and I'm gonna have to wait. I think I might skip my next trim because my guys are all just united. They're all United and Chelsea supporters. I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that. So, but yeah, top four, I think, ambitious enough for the investment that we've put in. Aubameyang signed the ting, bro. So hopefully, you know, it could be a job for us, man. Yes. Well, I'll move on to Kanzi's question next, in terms of just to put out there how important it is to have your own setup and not to be totally reliant I mean, with music, is collaboration is one of the most beautiful things that can come out of it. However, I mean, personally for me, I feel like as a musician and as a singer as well, someone that I sometimes get melodies just come into my head just out of the blue. Like literally, I might be in the shower, I might be in the middle of like having a sandwich, or even just before I'm going out to the gym, I might just get something, like just that idea, and I'm just like, man, I need to go upstairs. I literally run upstairs. I'm in my room at the moment. Literally just behind me is my bed. I've got my setup here. I've got all my computer, my processors, everything all set up here. And it's just awesome having all that stuff to be able to lace down the ideas, even if it's just to put down a quick demo and come back to it later, and then you can flesh it out and then put a beat to it. And now these days, you've got so many resources at your disposal. So even things like Splice, for example, now, I don't want it to become like a whole advertising session for that sort of thing. But you've got so many things where you can get sounds, and you don't even need to be what's crazy, you don't even need to be a musician that knows music theory anymore, because there's so many plugins that you can use, like Scalar and whatever, that will literally put in all the keys and the chords for you, and it's literally you taking your feeling and putting it out, and whatever sounds good to you. If you are a true proper artist, and you really, you're into your music, whatever's going on in here and in here, that goes out onto your computer on whatever DAW that you're using, that goes out to your support. They're going to feel it, man. And like I said, it's really important to be able to have your own space and not completely reliant, because that brings me to another point. Obviously, we love music. Music's a beautiful thing, but there's two sides of music as well. There's music as the art, and then there's music business as well. And that's something that I always tell people that's approached me and that speak to me about sort of how I get my music done. And I've learned tough lessons along the way, man, in terms of royalty, who you want to firstly work with in the studio, and then in terms of royalty splits, and then you know, labels coming to you and writing and all of these things. And I'll be honest, I'll put it out there, look, it's an unfiltered podcast. And I'll be unfiltered to say that I've been stung many a times by people that I never thought, that I never thought that would, do that to me. And it just taught me a lot, man. And it's really set me up to be a businessman as well as an artist, because, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to have the business side of things on lock, especially as an independent, because nowadays, because of the resources, because of your social media, etc., man, you can literally write a song, get everything out there, put it out there, do a music video, put it on your YouTube channel, and then own 100% of your stuff. And yeah, you might not have the PR and marketing budget to put your music out there for everyone to hear at first, but I just look at someone like Russ, for example. If I look at his TuneCore, he put up like a TuneCore print screen of stuff like years and years ago, man, and how slowly, like his sales and his numbers increased. And now, obviously, man, that's killing it. And you just see the progression and things like that. I watch stuff like that. And even for me, like, I'm slowly building up a catalog where now I can just literally go into my distribution account, log in. And, bro, I literally press the button, get my money out, and it's all for me. I don't need to speak to anyone else. I don't need to have any arguments with anyone. I don't need to feel salty about anything, because I know, like, it's just me. And because of that, because I don't have that political side and any connections with anyone else, and if anything is done, it's pre-agreed anyway, it just allows me to focus on solely the music. And I feel like I'm in such a better place, and I'm not at studio till like 2-3 in the morning, and you know, there are random people coming in and whatever. I'm just in my space. It's my bedroom, my music, my focus. So definitely, I think that's probably the question for Cans. That's definitely something. And again, I could go into loads of other things, but I think that's the sort of, you know, crux of that one. And then, bro, Elfresh, what was your question again? Yeah. I'm totally...
Goals. What are your goals?
Yeah, goals.
Yeah, so my goals, literally, as a what Kans was saying earlier about not just being a Bangladeshi South Asian singer, it's being a British Bangladeshi that can sing and can rap, and that can do it well, man, because for many years as a young British Bengali boy, I'll be honest, man, like I was embarrassed to say that I was Bengali, like, and there was a lot of people that I knew when I was like 14, 15, that actually management as well that advised me to tell people that I'm not from where I'm from, just purely because he or she felt that, you know, that might hold me back. And what's beautiful now is that I'm doing a lot of Bengali fusion stuff, and I've found myself a whole new plethora of audience just through YouTube and Facebook and the internet, for people out in Bangladesh and in New York and like all out in the States, when I look at my Spotify statistics and my YouTube stuff, and a lot of other British Bengalis that are actually feeling the music that I'm putting out with my Bengali influences, but still keeping it fresh in a sense where I can show it to like my white mates or my black mates or you know, any other like my Somali mates, like, literally, and they'll be feeling my stuff, and I'm like, yeah, you know what, like I'm proud to be doing this, because like you said earlier about finding your voice, I feel like I've definitely found my voice, because I'm able to stamp a part of my culture and background onto my music and be proud of it, as opposed to, you know, me holding something back, because end of the day, like I can't pretend that, you know, I'm like a Tory Lanez, for example, or like whoever, like they've got their own story and their background. I've got my own story and my background. Like, a lot of my music incorporates a lot of British Bangla folk. So there's something called Baul music. So back home, you had like a lot of traditional songs. And to be fair, a lot of those songs have actually been incorporated into Bollywood, and they're massive hits, like the melodies and stuff. I feel like we've got some amazing melodies and lyrics that we go by. And yeah, man, just taking that, and I think you know, just to end off and cap it off, my goal is to show people that me as a British Bangladeshi, not just a South Asian, that we can do it also. We're not completely conservative. Things are changing, yeah, man, to try and get that to a stage where, you know, I might not be the person, but in a few years' time, there might be a younger guy that maybe I even, you know, that sees me as like an inspiration to take that one and get onto that Radio One Extra Capital, just how you see all the Latino, Spanish, Hispanic stuff like popping now. Like, I'd love to see like the fusion of like South Asian music and all the other types of drill and whatever, just to make itself known to like the, you know, crossover. So yeah, man, that's the ultimate goal, man.
Love it, man. Thank you for sharing, bro. Even yesterday, your conversation just reminded me of a convo I just had yesterday with a buddy of mine, and he's of South Asian descent, but he's a music label executive living in New York, you know, and we were talking, and he was like saying that, you know, nowadays it's so much better, you know, like we see so many Asian brown desi artists out there, and like they're proud about it. This is something we would never see growing up, like, you know, in the hip hop, you know, urban and pop, even like just we'd never see it. We would just always see either like Bollywood or like whatever TV is showing us, you know. But nowadays, all these kids are lucky to see this, you know, and that's, you know, powerful, man. I really crazy, believe that. Man.
I was literally having a conversation with a mate of mine as well. Same thing, man. Like we were coming up, like if not, and exactly what you were saying, Bilal, like. You would never imagine, like, for us back then, even thinking about writing songs in your own language, even, right? Right. Now that shit's popping, right? Like, everyone's, like, India has, like, changed the game. I mean, it's mad exciting. But, like, I'm mixing a song for a mate of mine now, and he's rapping in Fijian Hindi. He's Fijian Indian.
Nice, nice.
Wow. And there's no one doing that. You know what I mean? And we went to high school, like, we were high school age mates together. So we were having this conversation. He was like, yeah, man, when we were kids, we never would have thought about this. And he's like, but now it's like, I love it. It's energizing me.
Yeah.
It's a powerful thing, man.
It's a great time to be alive, man. I love it. That's awesome. Well, there's a question real quick over here that I want to look at from YouTube. Nabiha Amin asks, in the music industry, not everyone is gonna like your music. How do you deal with the hate? Whoever wants to answer this one.
You block it out. Just focus on your creativity, man. Just block it out. Yeah. I think that's like one of the hardest things to do. But bro, like, I speak to some of the biggest artists in the world and they say, I don't even look at my YouTube comments, man.
Right.
Because, you know, sometimes you just got to block it out. Focus and remember why you're doing what you're doing. You're in it to make great music. Stay creative, man. All that other BS, just block that shit out, man. 100%. You know what I mean?
And one other thing I'll say is that the people that say stuff online, I guarantee you, like, 90% of the time is people just looking for attention, because I guarantee if you saw those people at a rave or one of your shows or whatever, they're not gonna say that to your face, man. And right. You know, that's all you need. You just, these people get in too confident behind the keyboard. Thanks. And it's just easy to say whatever. Like, anyone can say anything. Like, I can say something right now if I really want to. Like, if I'm feeling really horrible, but you know, it is what it is. And it's difficult for the kids growing up nowadays. Like, you know, they don't have that real world experience to think that actually these aren't real comments. Like, people can say whatever to you, but get out in the real world, man. Trust me, people won't say those things to you.
Facts.
For real.
I agree. I'm a big fan of Gary Vaynerchuk, and he always says that these negative comments is a reflection of them, not of you. You know, it's what's out of them. It's not nothing to do with you. That makes sense.
For real, for real. Mm-hmm.
Cool, man. You know, you guys have stuck with us for this whole hour. I know it's getting late for El Fresh.
That's cool, bro. I'm buzzing after this, bro. I'm not going to be able to sleep. Like,
that's awesome. I love hearing that. Love that. But we're pretty much close to the end of the show, and this is our final segment of the show. The one that I, you know, jumped gun on earlier. Independence is priceless. So, Independence is Priceless. This segment is brought to you by Tsunomi.io. It's a service that helps artists from around the world to really be independent, truly own their music, own their art, and get paid, just like our brothers over here have been saying in this episode. This is a company that's, you know, Asia-focused and really trying to help global Asian artists to get there. You know, can you believe that, you know, TuneCore, CD Baby, and all that has been there, but there has never been, like, a product like that for Asian artists around the world, like really, like from Asia for Asians. Like, it's crazy to me, but we have it here finally. So in this segment, I really want to ask you guys to give us a little, you know, a little pointer or two, to one or two things that you can say to the independent artists, to the audience who's watching, you know, before we end the show. Let's start with Bilal Shahid, bro. Like, I know you were talking a lot about, you know, owning your art and Russ and everything. Can you tell me a little more on that? Like, you know, what is like one thing you would tell a new artist right now today? Like, he's watching this today. He's like, fuck it. I'm going in. I'm going all in. I'm going to become the next Bilal Shahid. What are you going to tell that guy?
I'll tell that guy or girl. I'll say, firstly, obviously, make good music. That's always the first point. But other than that, I'd definitely say get all your royalty society accounts up and running, all in your name. I'd say get all your distribution accounts set up in your name. And as long as you've got control over your own stuff and you know what's coming in and out, I feel like, you know, just put your music out. Don't worry about, you know, views and all these things. Because nowadays, there are people on there that are making money from Spotify and these other streaming apps that aren't famous, that aren't social media famous. So someone might have like 2,000 to 5,000 Instagram followers, but I'll go onto one of their tunes on Spotify and they've got hundreds of thousands of streams, but the song isn't actually known in the mainstream.
Right.
So I know that person's DistroKid account or their CD Baby account or their TuneCore account or whatever distribution label account is popping. And to be fair, that's all that's gonna matter in the long run. Say if a label does come or an A&R or one of these guys come knocking at your door. These are the statistics. These are the things that are really gonna matter. Not all the other stuff. So you know, keep your money in the pocket. Don't worry too much about visuals and stuff. As important as they are, it's all about mainly making good music. Like I said, things like Spotify and the algorithmic playlists and the editorial submissions and all of these things, these are really important things to focus on first before all the glitz and glamour.
Nice. I love it. That's great advice, man. You know, figure out the business side of things. Learn. That's awesome. I love it. El Fresh, man, what's a message you want to give to the audience and for the independent artists who are watching us?
Yeah, for independent artists, especially for younger or newer artists, you know, take your time. You know, definitely take your time. Like, especially if you're coming into it, I think everything Bilal said just then is so key. And you want to be the best that you possibly can be when you release a song. You know, there's so many people that are dropping songs left, right, and center now, especially during COVID. So, you know, what makes you stand out? What makes you different? You know, you really need to work on your craft, hone your craft, master it. Nothing happens without having really good music at the end of the day. And then, you know, on top of that, I'd say take your time, because you only get one chance to make a first impression, you know, and when you come into the music industry or you want to put out music and you want to put out songs, you know, I think there's ways that you can do it that really engage people and that really mean something to people. And it's thinking about what's your story, what do you have to offer, and then how do you tell that story? You know, being thoughtful about all those things, I think can really go a long way. And taking your time around releases, you know, a lot of people, myself included, I fall into this trap. Like, I finish a song and I'm like, oh fuck, I want to put this out tomorrow. It's like, well, hold on, let me slow down. What's the story I can tell around here? How can we, you know, put energy into movements around this song to give this song the life that it deserves? You know, like, take your time, get your craft, keep your craft down pat, and you know, focus on your story, and you know, you'll be good.
Nice. That's awesome. I love that. Yeah, you shared some key points, man. Focus on yourself and then focus on the craft, the story. And earlier in the show, you mentioned, you know, find your voice, like find who you are, your brand. This is epic advice for any independent artist out there. Candyman, you've been listening to so many independent artists over the years and so many different types of artists, man. What is one takeaway that you want to leave for them?
I think Bilal and El Fresh hit a lot of the key points there, bro. What I'd like to add to that is build a strong team around you, as important as it is to be independent. And obviously, you know, own everything yourself, self-ownership and all that. That's all important. But I think having a strong team around you, don't surround yourself with yes men. You know what I mean? Like, right. I think that's like a common problem that I've seen over the last 12 months. You know, artists, big artists have surrounded themselves with yes man. Like one of the biggest rappers in the UK, Fredo, you know, he released a couple of tunes and he just received loads of backlash from his fans, man, from his core fans, his core fan base. And it got so bad where he had to go on his YouTube channel and delete the videos, bro. And I remember seeing him go up on Instagram live and say, this is why I can't have the man them in the studio, because they say yes, every tune is sick. You know what I mean? So don't have yes men around you, have a positive team around you. And yeah, man, just build with your team. As much as you're learning how to produce music, make music, show your best friend or make your best friend go out there and learn about artist management. You know what I mean? Your other friend learn how to DJ. Make your other friend learn how to do the marketing side of things and build that team around you, bro. You know what I mean?
Beautiful, man. That's amazing. Great advice, man. Have a strong team. All the greats have great teams. You know, that's really, it's never a one-man journey. It's a us thing. It's a we thing. That makes sense.
For real.
Man, I want to just add one more question, because Nabiha, I mean, man, you've been dropping such great questions. Yeah. Thank you for being here. I will actually direct this to Candyman. If you could change anything in the industry, what would you change?
Boy, the mentality. I think the mentality, but that's something that doesn't happen overnight. You know, we speak to a lot of artists and sometimes I feel like the mentality isn't there, bro. Like, I think growth comes from collaborating. I think expanding comes from collaborating. And I think a lot of artists that I speak to are scared to collaborate, bro. So what if My man's got 500 followers and you've got 35,000 followers, bro. He's a sick artist. Work with him, bro. Build with him. Do you get me? If he gains 1,000 followers off you, you never know. You might gain something out of him. He might make a next part of your brain open up, you know, on the creative front. And you might gain something out of him. So I think stop looking at numbers so much.
Right.
And just focus on what's important, man. Listen to the music, bro. And I hear that all the time, bro. I don't want to work with this geezer because, look at his following. Or I don't want to work with that guy because he might take my female fans. And that's just petty, bro. Petty. You know, you guys are laughing, but I've heard it. I've heard it, bro. I've heard it. You know what I mean?
Female fans, you know.
Yeah. Like,
they're commodities.
Crazy,
bro.
Crazy. And why the UK scene, the reason why it's got to where it's got to, you know, I keep referring back to the UK scene, but that's very close to home. I'm very passionate about the Desi thing as well. I'm passionate about pushing our culture to the forefront and bringing it to the mainstream. The reason why they've got to where they've got to is when Skepta releases an album, everyone from that UK scene has got that album cover as their display picture. And that's why are we not doing that? Why are we not doing that?
Right.
You know, or just to add to that, man, can I add to that? Like, tell you story from our perspective, just to add to exactly to that. Like, one of these artists that I work with, she was at a after party for one to Skepta's show, actually. And Skepta's DJ was there. And she was having a conversation just with a bunch of people that were hanging out, whatever. And, you know, this one person started going off about how, you know, they're not a fan of Australian music, you know, like they don't dig, you know, music that comes from Australia, especially hip hop and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Skepta's DJ interjects and is like, that's the problem. That's why the scene here won't grow. And that's why it doesn't get international recognition, because you guys don't support each other and have love or passion for one another. You're too busy hating on like self-hating even. It's not even hating on other people, but self-hating. And you know, he was like, that's why the UK is getting international love right now, is exactly what Candyman just said. And that's 100% agree with what was just said, man.
That's awesome, man. That's exactly what we want. You know, our on Desi Hip Hop, our tagline, our slogan, our hashtag is unity through hip hop. You know, I love that. That's what I want, man. That's what I always wanted since day one. And I think we're slowly getting there bit by bit, you know, every inch helps. Shout out to you guys. Thank you so much for joining us here today, man. Shout out to the audience, definitely. But shout out to you, man. Candyman, thank you for joining, man. You make a huge impact on the whole, you know, South Asian world, as well as the UK scene. Like, you make huge impact. You and DJ Limelight are like the top notch of this radio world. And I love it. So thank you for doing what you do, bro. And keep it up. I love to see more of that. Bilal Shahid, thank you for doing what you do. You know, you've taken pride in the Bengali, you know, UK British audience thing. And, you know, I love that, you know, just keep that up. I love to see more of that. You know, just like you said, that like kids back in the day didn't used to respect our own thing, but now we all do. And the next generation will continue to do that just because of artists like you. So I appreciate you for that. El Fresh the Lion, you are a lion, bro. Like, I love your like perspective and your music. It's very, you know, eye-opening. I really enjoyed Alchemy. I really, you know, I really love that book, Alchemist. And listening to your song, like, brought me some, you know, some thoughts around that. And I love that, you know. And so keep doing what you do, bro. I really appreciate you, you know, seeing you in MTV Hustle last year was really interesting, too. Actually, that's where we met for the first time in Bombay, so. That was sick, man. I appreciate you.
Love to you, Rap, man. Thanks for having us. And Bilal, Candyman, thank you, bro. Much love to you guys, man.
Peace, bro. Peace, man.
Nice to meet you, bro.
100. Thank you guys for watching, man. This is the end of the show. We will be back next week, every Wednesday, Unfiltered Podcast, YouTube, Spotify. It's everywhere, man. Just go find it. I'm your host, DJ Raf. I'll see you guys next week. Peace.
DJ Raf, what up? Yo, Desi Hip Hop General. Check. Unfiltered, con artist, New York City. Yo, we ain't cloud chasing, we about facing the devil. You about hating, we about raising up people levels. Ain't no doubt, Mason, I'm building upward, you seeking trouble. I'm not waiting, caught in the matrix, but keep my hustle. The devil whispered, but I come mentally with the muscle. When the rebels fitting sentences, all of these kids with bubbles. Till I meditate and lift my dimensions while preaching love.